For too many applicants, the security clearance process remains frustrating and arduous. But over the last year, it's undergone some subtle but important changes. As House members are finding out today, these include the establishment of the National Background Investigations Bureau, or NBIB, and enhancements to make the investigative process more effective. Bill Evanina is the director of the National Counterintelligence and Security Center and the National Counterintelligence Executive. He tells executive editor Jason Miller how the work done in 2016 is setting up success this year in improving the security clearance process.
The ability to get some of our security executive agent directives out, like the utilization of social media in a background investigation, was a big deal. The Question 21 enhancement we on the SF-86 that deals with mental illness and how that should be adjudicated as part of a background investigation. The creation of the NBIB as part of an independent process to bifurcate OPM was a big process we were part of. So on the security side, we made some significant progress. On the CI side, I think we've done an amazing job of really true integration of the intelligence community to drive the filling of gaps in our intelligence basis, as well as the threats that we face from an asymmetric standpoint, not only to the U.S. government, but to the private sector.
When you talk about enhanced background investigations, can you talk a little bit more about what happened in 2016 and how you guys enhanced
it? So you have three big entities that really deal with background investigations. You have the OPM/NBIB entity. You have the DNI, who is the SecEA authority and the intelligence community, and then you have DOD, which is the big gorilla in the room. And when you have 4 million Americans that possess security clearances, that is a big number, and every 5 to 7 years they get reinvestigated. So we have to get more nimble, efficient, and faster about how we do those investigations. We've taken a really hard look at not only the business process of how it works on a day-to-day basis, but what are the bigger things that we could change subsequent to the Federal Investigative Standards in 2012 that can really manifest holistic change, not only for the government, but for the contractors out there who have one big part of the process. So if you look at security clearance holders, there's 4 million in the United States. Approximately 800,000 are contractors. That is a big part of the program. And we have to be able to be nimble enough to adjudicate those equally across the board and prioritize them where needed. And I think the last word I'll say there is we made a lot of progress in 2016 in the process of prioritization. Not every security clearance holder and security clearance are equal. And so I think we've come to the understanding and we've come to the process of identifying ways to effectively prioritize that your security clearance and you are more important than mine, so you should go first, and then you should get polygraphed first, and I could stay second. And then what we do is also have leverage some of the tools we have to say that, well, Bill versus Bob, Bill's in a higher position, Bob has more access to data. So we have to prioritize that. Now, we've done a really good job in 2016 across the government identifying those thresholds.
And I think the prioritization issue is a big deal. Is the prioritization something where it wasn't done before and that's helping to address maybe some of the challenges with how long it takes?
We probably weren't as effective and efficient at prioritization across the board. I think certain onesie-twosie agencies were better than others, but I think subsequent to Manning and Snowden and now Martin, you have to take a real hard look at what's the best and most efficient way to do it, not only individually, but what I want to see is consistency across the enterprise so that we can assure not only that everyone's doing it the right manner, but we have reciprocity. So that DOD employee, an OPM employee, or an FBI employee are all cleared equally and that there's reciprocity across the board. And I think the prioritization, as long as it's standard and across the board, then we could assure that we're going to get maximum efficiencies and reduce the backlog.
You brought up the magic word reciprocity. I know that there's been memos, there's been attempts, there's been pleases and really, really encouragement. Do you see reciprocity happening more and more? Is it something that people can accept?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. So I think reciprocity is one of the, I'll call it, as we see today, fake news. So you look at, we did a really good look this year about reciprocity. What's the urban legend versus the reality? And what we identified is the reciprocity, we're somewhere around 86-87% in terms of reciprocity across the government, which I think is a great number. So when you look at all things being equal, people in status who have clearances, we're over 85% in terms of reciprocity, which I think is an astounding number that we'd like to keep. Now, obviously, we can get better at that, but I think the numbers show out over the last few years. The lack of reciprocity was fake news.
That's fascinating because, again, we hear that all the time in the private sector, contractors and other agencies saying, well, I had to go through the whole process again when I went from agency X to agency Y. But in fact, they may have to gone through a process, but not the entire process. And that's where maybe the confusion comes in. This idea that, yeah, we accepted, as you said, you know, 85% of your investigation, we just did the 15% that we thought was most important. Is that what you're seeing, or you're seeing the 100% taken?
The delta there, that 15%, are those individuals who have extenuating circumstances or things that had to be mitigated. For instance, subsequent to their last clearance polygraph, they've made 4 trips overseas, or they've had undisclosed travel, or they've had other issues that may predicate the need for further investigation, which could take longer, right? So those 15% are all accountable for rational reasons. And I think when you look at that 15%, it's a small number, that's where most of the noise comes from. And I think, but we're very happy. I think when you look at from a DOD, OPM, MBIB, and an ODNI perspective, the numbers vet themselves out, and we're very happy to talk about those particular numbers.
Sounds like you need a Mythbusters campaign around security clearances. The other thing you brought up just related to this is the social media guidance that I guess came out in 2016 as well. I know that caused some concern. Talk a little bit about that implementation and what's really coming from that effort.
So I'm a big believer in the need to utilize public-facing social media as part of the investigative process. To go through an adjudication of a security clearance and not have that data available does even pass the smell test for me. So we have to, and we put in place really trident safeguards for privacy and civil liberties to ensure that we are going to look at only public-facing websites, whether it be Facebook or Twitter, which will allow us to identify if there's a need for further investigation. If not, move forward. But I cannot, in good faith, say that we are going to give Jason a security clearance and we have not looked at his Facebook open face page. I think that's irresponsible, but yet we have provided an opportunity to utilize the social media aspect with, I would say, solid protections for privacy and civil liberties, which has to be part of everything we do.
Can you talk about the solid protections piece? Because I could, one, close my Facebook off and you couldn't see it. So if I'm doing something untoward, you wouldn't know because I've hid it. But then again, if on Twitter, for instance, or on LinkedIn, if I'm posting something that's very political, let's say conservative or liberal, that maybe wouldn't fit into the culture, that also could put me at risk. And even though that's on my personal time, it's my personal account. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about how you ensure the privacy and civil liberties piece.
First of all, if you post anything on Facebook or Twitter that's political, it's irrelevant to your security clearance. If you post anything that's protected by any type of class in the United States, it's irrelevant. So no, if you post in there that a hate issue or you have connotation of criminal activity, all that allows us to do is set a lead for someone to further investigate that, right? No different than we would if we got information from your neighbor, you know, that you were conducting illegal activity in your backyard. Wouldn't make you ineligible for, but it would set a lead to do that. So, but it has to be on your public-facing website. Now, if you don't have a Facebook or you don't have a Twitter feed, there's nothing for us to look at. But all that does, you know, it's a lot of extra work for the government, but I think it's work that has to be done. And I think the investigators who do this for a living have been fundamentally trained that there's a difference between, hey, I've just robbed the CVS versus I am politically right or left.
I think that's a key point that you bring up is that it just establishes a lead. It doesn't say you are qualified or disqualified. And I think that's what people may be worried about. I think that's a very important piece of information to make sure federal employees know how you guys are using it. Generally speaking, do you feel like it's going well, the implementation's going well? Do you feel like some fears, some concerns have kind of dissipated?
I do. And I want to first point out that having that one beer is not going to make you ineligible for a security clearance. So I think people need to know that, right? But I think to reiterate, the identification of potential investigative issues can come from any part of your background investigation. Your website that you might have, a Facebook page or a Twitter page, is just one of a million places that we look. So if your neighbor says that he believes you're growing marijuana in your backyard, that doesn't make you ineligible. That means there's a lead's going to be set for someone to follow up on that. No different than on your Facebook page, if you say that I like the marijuana in my backyard, we're going to follow up with a lead to do that, right? So it's just another aspect of that. In terms of, I think there's been some relief in the government and investigators that they are now officially, from a policy perspective, okay to go ahead and look at these social media concepts when we're investigating background investigations. Historically, it wasn't against the law to do that, but there wasn't a national policy. So I think there's been a lot of sighs and relief that, okay, now we have a national policy that can protect our mindset, not only from an investigative perspective, a legal perspective, and that we have done it in a way that protects privacy and civil liberties, which should make everyone happy. And I think for those who were against this idea early on, I think we've alleviated some of their fears that we have safeguards in place. And the smell test of being able to say that we have looked at your social media, I think has really saved the day for us.
I want to bring up one other area around security clearances. I know there's a ton to talk about. You brought up in 2016, you helped with the NBIB. From your perspective, from ODNI and the National Counterintelligence and Security Center, what role did you play with NBIB, and what will you be playing as we head into 2017 and beyond?
Here in NCSC, in my role as the surrogate for Director Clapper as a PAC principal, we are one of four critical elements as part of what's called the PAC, so the performance accountability. And it's myself, it's the director of OPM, it's the deputy director of OMB, and it's the USDI. All play a major part in security clearance reform world. We are all partners. We work closely with NBIB on a daily basis. Charlie Fallon is not only a good partner, but a good friend of mine. So we talk daily about the pros and cons and initiatives we have for 2017, which are really aggressive. We work closely with USDI. We are big proponents of the creation of the NBIB as a stand-up entity, as its own aspect under the tethered arm of OPM. There has to be some accountability, and we looked at the accountability, responsibility, and having a director who owns that program was a critical aspect. And I think the NBIB's growth this past year has been dramatic in terms of not only setting up the structure, but already being big players in the process moving forward, which allows them to have an optic on background investigations that are separate and distinct from the bigger mission of OPM.
Bill Evanina is the director of the National Counterintelligence and Security Center and the National Counterintelligence Executive. Check out all of our coverage on security clearances and the ongoing reforms at federalnewsradio.com.